From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. It's been a tough couple of weeks for an Islamic school in Homewood. The Islamic Academy of Alabama wanted to move to Hoover to accommodate a bigger school, but that faced public opposition at a meeting earlier this month. At the same time, the school has faced anti-Islamic rhetoric, most notably from U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville. WBHM's Vahni Shori has this story.
I'd like to call the December 1st Hoover Planning and Zoning meeting to order. And ask the secretary to call roll, please.
In a packed meeting room decorated with Christmas wreaths, the Hoover Zoning and Planning Commission heard speaker after speaker weighing in on the possibility of an Islamic school in the city. While some spoke of traffic and city planning issues, others shared concerns about a growing Muslim population in the neighborhood. Resident Johnny Padgett prefaced his comments saying that they weren't an indictment of Islam, but he went on to say that a Muslim wedding took place in an Airbnb next to his house while he was away.
We weren't there. Luckily, you know, I don't know what would have happened if I was there or my wife was there by herself. It was very intimidating.
He said that cars blocked his driveway and that a vehicle left tracks in his yard.
There's different cultures and there's different respecting boundaries. And that's all I'm saying.
Martha Johannes recently moved to Hoover and shared her experience of what she called a takeover from the Muslim community in England.
They gave in an inch and were soon taken for rides miles away with no hope of landing back to familiarity. In reality, they're not assimilated nor integrated, but rather estranged from our society. Would that not threaten our own well-being and safety?
Ma'am, I'm going to stop you because this has nothing to do with the school.
And when it came time for a vote?
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay.
It was a unanimous rejection. Shortly after that meeting, Senator Tommy Tuberville spoke about the school's initiative on the InfoWars podcast.
Sharia law and Islam is not a religion. Mm-hmm. It's a cult, okay? And their cult believes in totally different things we believe in. They don't believe in, Americans, kill the infidel, do away with everything that we believe in. They hate Christians.
You know, we are for unity. We are for respect for all faiths. This is what we teach our students is love. And you know, we would invite him. You know, he's very welcome. Senator Tuberville, come visit us.
That's Stacey Abdeen. She grew up in Calera and founded the school in 1996. She's the assistant principal of curriculum and teaching of the K-12 school. When asked what she's most proud of about the school, she answers confidently.
I am most proud of our students. Our students are amazing. They have achieved amazing results in everything that they've done.
The statewide average for the ACT, which is a college entrance exam, is an 18. Abdeen says that the academy's average for the past year has been a 26. And as for the curriculum,
we actually follow the Alabama state standards. So we teach, everything we teach is according to the state standards of Alabama. We also use the Alabama, state of Alabama approved textbook list.
In addition to math, social studies, and other run-of-the-mill classes, students learn Arabic and Islam. The school is open to people of all faiths and backgrounds. According to Abdeen, at least 20 nationalities are represented.
I like the school because I have a lot of friends I don't see in other places.
I like the school because we're a community and like everyone has different personalities and we can all share everything.
Those are fourth graders. And this is Yusuf Nabi, the student council president, when asked what it means to him as a young Muslim person attending an Islamic school.
It's amazing because at the same time of also gaining like traditional knowledge like science, math, I'm also gaining knowledge about my religion. And it's really good for me because instead of like growing up isolated from my community, I grew up with it.
But right now, the academy is confronting a new climate. The public hearing and Senator Tuberville's comments have inspired heated conversation on social media. One user remarked that the school looks flammable. Many others accused the Muslim community of planning a violent takeover of the country.
We did not have to hire security after 9/11. We've had to hire security after Senator Tuberville's comments.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, designated the senator as an Islamophobic individual. They cite his rhetoric that they compare to former Alabama Governor George Wallace's. This is the first time CARE has given a U.S. senator this designation. Senator Tuberville responded in a post on X, badge of honor. Bashar Halaf, the youth director at the Birmingham Islamic Society, isn't disheartened, though.
Not necessarily too surprised of all the hate, because I know it's going to be followed up with love from the rest of the community. And we always know water puts out fire, you know? So the water's going to come, the other churches, the other people, other religions, they're going to come together, send their love, send their peace on us, and then we're chilling after that.
As for the school's rezoning application, they've decided not to pursue the property in Hoover as they reevaluate how to accommodate their growing student body. Vahini Shori, WBHM.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. 5 out of 9 candidates for mayor of Birmingham debated the best path forward for the city last night. The event was hosted and streamed by local radio station WJLD. As WBHM's Noel Annenden reports, the politicians parsed through crime, economic development, and infrastructure issues facing the city.
Incumbent Mayor Randall Woodfin, seeking his third term, spent his evening playing defense, particularly from State Representative Wanda Lynn Givan. She argues the city has been poorly led since Woodfin took office and says thousands of people have been leaving the city over the last few years. She says the city needs more investment in reducing crime, support for Black-owned businesses and Black neighborhoods, and patching up of roads.
Make it make sense, Birmingham. When he took office, we had potholes. They now look like craters. You can sit in them. Progress?
Jefferson County Commissioner LaShonda Scales also took issue with Woodfin's leadership, particularly over the recent conversion of the Birmingham Waterworks Board to a regional authority. She adds, as mayor, she would fight for the city's needs, adding that she understands its challenges well as someone who grew up in poorer city neighborhoods that need development.
No more lies and selling pies. We gotta get back to putting Birmingham first and its people.
Woodfin says his opponents offered lies in the face of his facts.
People on this stage will have you believe there has been absolutely no progress made in this city, which we know is absolutely not true.
He says under his leadership, blight has lessened, crime has dropped, and school attendance is up. He adds that the police force is stronger and neighborhoods are growing. Brian Rice, a business developer, says communities in Birmingham are struggling. He says as mayor, he would work to make sure the city employs more Black contractors and ensure that investments are made in Black-owned businesses. Rice adds he would put local residents first and invest in their communities.
We have to stop giving funds to public servants. We must put the people first.
Businessman and pastor Frank Woodson says as mayor, the buck would stop with him. He argues the city needs more accountability and a leader who will ensure that city officials work together on problems. He adds that he will focus on addressing violent crime and impoverished neighborhoods.
But there are people that are hurting and they don't have a voice. And I told them I would speak for you wherever you are.
Birmingham will choose a new mayor on Tuesday, August 26th. Noel Annenden, WBHM.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin cruised to a third term Tuesday. As WBHM's Noel Annenden reports, Woodfin says the city's next chapter will focus on reducing violence, supporting students, and providing housing to the city's residents.
Make some noise, Team Woodfin! It's definitely a randemic tonight, y'all.
DJ Slim Rob hypes up the crowd at Work Play in downtown Birmingham as results from the mayoral election roll in. Once those results were clear, the man of the hour spoke.
Know that Birmingham deserves leadership that continues to put them first. And because I work for you, I want you to know I hear you and I see you. And I want you to know that I'm ready to keep moving the city forward with you.
Unofficial results show Woodfin scored an easy victory over his opponents with 75% of the vote. Jefferson County Commissioner LaShonda Scales trailed behind with 15%, followed by State Representative Wanda Lynn Givan with 4%. But Woodfin did not address his opponents. He instead focused his speech on thanking his supporters and his family.
I'm not just a mayor, I'm a dad now. I ran for mayor because I wanted to give back to the city that raised me. But I stay in this fight because of them.
Woodfin supporters spent the evening partying. Among them was Brooklyn White, who says she likes how Woodfin has supported the city school system since he first became mayor in 2017, especially now that her own kid just started kindergarten.
I always tell my family in Chicago, like, move out to Birmingham. We have a wonderful mayor. I love Woodfin.
Another supporter, Tracy Watson, says she moved to Birmingham in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina back in 2005. That's when she met Woodfin, who worked for the city council and the mayor's office at the time, later becoming an assistant city attorney. Watson says she likes Woodfin because he is humble and respectful to work with.
I've watched Birmingham grow. I've watched so many transitions that have taken place under his leadership. Most of the people seem to be at ease with him, with his temperament, with his intelligence, with his genuine love for this city.
Mitch Hungerpiller praised Woodfin for his handling of rough roads in his neighborhood.
He paved my roads in Crestwood and nobody else would do it.
Hunger Pillar hopes that in his next term, Woodfin will address crime in Birmingham and support the city's research institutions like Southern Research and UAB, along with its business community.
He needs to get behind the business community and continue to help us be successful in all our endeavors and the risks that we take.
Noel Annan, WBHM.
Live from Birmingham, I'm Richard Banks with WBHM News. President Donald Trump encouraged graduates while hitting some familiar themes Thursday night as he spoke at a special ceremony ahead of the University of Alabama commencement. WBHM's Noel Annan reports.
Despite being introduced by beloved former UA football coach Nick Saban, Trump received the loudest welcome of the night when he took the stage in the Coleman Coliseum. He congratulated UA seniors, calling them the first graduating class of the golden age of the United States.
The Crimson Tide does not rest, does not quit, and does not stop winning.
In addition to singing the praises of UA's students, Trump shared highlights from his first 100 days in office. He took credit for many things that have happened since his term began, from a drop in illegal immigration to a drop in egg prices.
We're turning it around very fast. We will very quickly make America great again.
Noel Annan, WBHM.
State lawmakers approved legislation that would allow the Alabama Farmers Federation to offer health care coverage to its members that would not be regulated as health insurance. Supporters say the proposal would provide a less expensive option for farmers and others who are struggling with high health care costs. Opponents argue the plans would skirt the regulations traditional insurance plans must abide by, and the alpha plans could deny coverage to people because of pre-existing conditions. The state Senate approved the bill yesterday. The bill now goes to Governor Kay Ivey for her possible signature. And retired City of Birmingham employees will not get an increase in pension payments, says Mayor Randall Woodfin. Birmingham's Retirement and Relief System Pension Board voted unanimously last month to increase the pensions for retired employees or surviving family members by $400 a month for 1 year. However, the Birmingham City Council would have to approve the proposal before it could go into effect. Woodfin says the pension fund does not have the $18 million to support the hike. You'll find more news anytime at WBHM.org. It is 7:34 and 69 degrees in Birmingham. Mostly cloudy skies here, but the National Weather Service has fair skies in Tuscaloosa with 67 degrees. Rain and thunderstorms through tomorrow. Some storms could be severe. Highs today near 80, lows tonight in the mid-60s.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Icy temperatures and snowy weather are blowing through Alabama Friday, and with schools closed and many businesses as well, it's a great excuse to go out and enjoy the snow. Birmingham's Highland Park neighborhood came to life this morning. This afternoon, we have some voices of those taking in the snow day.
I'm Glenn Kinsler, and
this I'm Bennett is... Kinsler. I like it because we never see it and it's fun.
I like it at this moment. 12 hours from now, I might have a different answer.
My name is Krista Rose, and I'm actually a dental student here in Birmingham.
I'm Chris Gerard. I am a server here in Birmingham.
When we woke up this morning, he's like, look out the window, and I was so thrilled. I haven't seen snow in 5 years, so this is very exciting for me. I'm a big snow lover. I'm a polar bear, being from, you know, from the Midwest, so I'm so excited. It's just so pretty, like blanketing everything. It's just kind of, it brings out joy in people, and I love it.
I love snow days in Alabama because they're kind of random and everybody usually gets off. So like you see it here, everyone's outside like playing and stuff. Everyone's like scrambling to take advantage of it. So I just love that everybody has fun. It's nice. It's just like a surprise day off.
My name is Caitlin Pippins. I'm from Tuscaloosa. I feel like it shuts everything down, which is kind of annoying to some, but I think it's fun. And it like brings out the child in everybody in the South. Work was closed today. They closed the office yesterday morning. So I said, good. I was supposed to go on a trip this weekend and that got canceled. So that's like a bummer, but like, this is a trip.
Yeah. My name's Masaryk Fetko.
My name's Hugh Patton. Yeah.
Today is a snow day. I'm a teacher down in downtown Birmingham, and we got the news yesterday, the day before, that we were gonna get a snow day, and everybody, it gave everybody a lot of energy throughout the week, actually, yeah, to know that they got Friday off, which was really sweet to see.
Living in the South, where it's not as frequent, or it's not like a 6 month long experience. Scraping off your car is nice. But I was just saying earlier, really appreciate like kind of sharing this snow day with this neighborhood, and you know, we walk around these parks a lot, and to see like all three of these small parks like really activated with all these people
in a way that it isn't always,
is really special, and brings me a lot of joy to see.
Hey, I'm Sarah Petty, and I live in Highland Park.
And I'm Ellie Muyal, and I also live in Highland Park.
We're totally playing hooky.
No, we're not. No, we are. We did get the day off, especially for my job. Our trucks can't go out because of the weather, so I get to work from home.
The snow is absolutely amazing. I want it to keep snowing. I don't even like to see cars driving because they're like messing up the snow.
Yeah, I'm already sad for the time it's going to go away and melt. I want it to be here for days because we don't get it. It's always one day and done. It'd be nice to have 2 or 3 days of snow dumping on us.
Those are people in Birmingham's Highland Park neighborhood enjoying today's snowfall. This piece was produced by WBHM's Noel Ananen. From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Tuesday morning, community members gathered outside of Alabama Public Television's offices in Birmingham. The protest was in advance of APT's board meeting to discuss whether the station would cut ties with PBS, a discussion spurred by funding cuts to public media by the Trump administration. WBHM's Vahini Shori and Andrew Gelderman were on the scene.
C is for cookie, it's good enough for me. C is for cookie, it's
That's
good
Dahlia
enough
Abrams.
For me.
Both she and Julie Reese came dressed as Cookie Monster in support of APT keeping PBS programming. On Monday, Governor Kay Ivey issued a letter encouraging APT to seek public input before making a decision on whether or not to disaffiliate from PBS. When asked what Cookie Monster would say, Reese replied,
"Me no like this. Me want free programming for all children. We're one of the first in the nation to have this, and we're going to be one of the first in the nation to get rid of it."
She's talking about how Alabama Public Television was the first statewide public broadcasting network in 1955. Michael Jones was also in attendance. He was carrying a sign with a stuffed Elmo pinned to it that read, "Elmo is not the enemy of the people."
The public is in the title of Alabama Public Television. So we should be heard because we, through tax dollars, pay for this.
According to Jones, another important angle of the issue to consider is the lack of access to internet and streaming in many rural parts of the state.
A lot of kids don't have internet access. And public television is an asset that they can get over the air for free. So I think it's just very short-sighted to think that their personal preference, you know, overrides everything else that does so much good for the people of the state. So.
During their meeting, the commission decided that they would keep PBS programming through at least June 2026. In line with the governor's request, they also decided to open avenues for public comment and push a decision to a later date. If APT decides to disaffiliate from PBS, it will be the first public TV station to do so.
Vahini Shori
and Andrew Gelderman, WBHM.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Tonight, a musical group from Birmingham will continue their journey to a $1 million prize as they compete on NBC's America's Got Talent. The Birmingham Youth and Young Adult Fellowship Choir is a gospel choir made up of young people from ages 9 to 29. WBHM's Vahini Shori went to rehearsal to hear more about the television experience and learn about the choir.
This summer, a group of young people took the stage for the opportunity to compete for $1 million as a part of America's Got Talent's annual talent competition. Wearing bright t-shirts and overalls, they stood under massive X-shaped signs for their audition. What did the judges have to say? This is notoriously hard-nosed Simon Cowell.
Every single one of you played the perfect part. We had lead vocals. We had emotion. And I'm so honored that you would come here on our 20th anniversary. And in return, I want to give you something.
A rare golden buzzer moment. The golden buzzer is awarded to extraordinary acts. It allows them to move straight to the live show portion of the competition and avoid elimination rounds. Each judge only gets one golden buzzer to award per season. The Birmingham Youth and Young Adult Fellowship Choir was founded in 2015, in part by Akeem Lee while he was in high school.
So we wanted to do something to give back to the community. So we had a singing group in school, and one of my friends was like, let's do a concert. So I said, well, what if we were to get some of our, you know, classmates, some of our friends, church members, whoever, and put together a youth choir.
The concert was a way to provide families in need with back-to-school supplies. And now, a decade later, the choir still hosts that annual concert every summer. Lee was raised in the historical 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham and is a product of the city, as are the rest of the choir's members. They belong to churches around the city and attend Birmingham City Schools. Jakayla Evans is one of the choir's members. She joined about a year ago, inspired by a friend at her high school who was also in the choir.
I got in, first rehearsal, I fell in love. So now I'm here and I stuck with it.
What made you fall in love?
I think it was so wholesome and family-like.
Evans didn't grow up going to church, and she described her relationship with her faith as rocky before joining the choir.
I've never joined church, but I've always wanted to sing for the Lord. And when I found this choir, I was like, wait, I'm actually doing this. This is what I want to do, and I'm finally doing it.
Singing for the choir gives Evans what she calls unspeakable joy.
You know how you expect the sun to rise and like it always has its duty to rise? I feel like that's what singing for the Lord gives me. It gives me a purpose, and it's very fulfilling.
Which is a common experience for participants. This is how Jessica Judge, another choir member, describes it.
I love singing for the Lord, by the Lord. And that brings joy to my heart, and I really love it a lot.
Besides feelings of joy, other choir members talk of purpose, community, and fellowship. They say that's been strengthened by the choir's golden buzzer moment. Here's member Peyton Marbury.
Like, it was so outrageous. Like, getting the golden buzzer is just a different experience.
Director Akeem Lee hopes that the choir's golden buzzer has meaning beyond the choir.
I hope that it inspires other young people that regardless of your background, regardless of what school you may attend, regardless of what you may see in your community around you, you can be anybody you want to be, and you can do anything you want to do, and then keeping your faith in God. He doesn't operate on your time, he operates on his.
You can keep up with the Birmingham Youth and Young Adult Fellowship Choir on America's Got Talent this season as they compete in the live shows starting tonight. Vahini Shori, WBHM.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Historic preservation is commonly thought of as the work of restorers and builders. But as WBHM's Noelle Annanen reports, a group of women are using ghost tours of historic sites as a way to preserve pieces of Birmingham's history.
Do you believe in ghosts? Leslie Ann Hyde certainly does.
My entire life, I have had different paranormal instances happen to me. I've always believed in guardian angels, I've had spirit guides, and I've always gotten messages.
That's why she started the Southern Ghost Girl Tours, opening up some of the oldest, most haunted buildings in the state to the curious, the believer, and even the skeptic of supernatural events. One dark, rainy night in Birmingham, I joined a tour of about a dozen people at Arlington House, a former plantation home in West Birmingham.
You want to face us? So we can see it a little better.
19th century floorboards creak and echo ominously in the antebellum home. One tour member holds glowing dowsing rods, these L-shaped rods that swivel parallel to the ground, pointing, supposedly, at ghosts.
And we're going to ask that spirit come forward and communicate with us through the rods.
Machines start beeping, rods start swinging.
Which means there's probably a lot of energy going on.
Armed with boxes that look almost like old VHS players that spirits are said to send words through, along with flashlights spirits can turn on and off, and other ghost hunting paraphernalia, tourgoers explored the halls and grounds of Arlington. As far as any encounters, the people taking the tour got varying results.
I'm definitely open-minded about it. It'd be pretty exciting to see something, also probably be pretty scary.
Seen anything? No, not yet.
I hope so.
I'm not expecting to, but I really hope so.
I mean, I already believed it. And nothing so far. I mean, there have been a few, like, little weird things.
That's Aaron Owens, Nicole and Brenda Klein, and Lindsay Warren. While they weren't exactly convinced the grounds of Arlington are haunted, one tour member did believe in spirits. Here's Trina Owens.
Like the other day, I smelled sitting in a recliner of my father-in-law's, and he passed a couple years ago. I smell his tobacco. He chewed tobacco all the time sitting there. And I had to scrub that recliner, but I smell his tobacco, I smell his cologne.
That faith in the supernatural is the heartbeat of the Southern Ghost Girl tours. Their first tour at Arlington House drew 200 people back in 2018, according to their founder, Leslie Ann Hyde.
The ladies on the team, including myself, we're what you would call empaths. We're very sensitive people. All of us have had experiences of the paranormal.
Hyde says she has heard messages from spirits during the tours, but she said spirits can demonstrate their presence in many ways, even in WBHM's own studio.
As we were just doing the interview, your recorder kind of just went out and died. So
could be the spirits.
It could be, because with a lot of our recording equipment, the spirits will actually drain the equipment. They drain batteries. It'll mess with electronics.
Whether or not our studio is actually haunted, I can attest that in this case, she was right. The recorder batteries drained very quickly during our interview. The Southern Ghost Girl tours run at historic and allegedly haunted sites all across the South. And while not all may believe in the ghostly aspect of the tours, what is undeniable is the cash they raise. Whenever a tour is held at a historic venue, Hyde says some of the proceeds go to fund preservation there.
I feel like, you know, it is very important to continue talking about these places. So that, you know, our children, grandchildren will know the history.
Bill Cagle, president of the Pickens County Historical Society in Georgia, says money from the tours can prove vital.
You know, there's always something that needs to be done for a 120-year-old building.
Cagle adds the Ghost Girl tours donated around $15,000 to the society over the last 7 years. Ticket proceeds have helped fund HVAC systems, windows, and replastering at historic sites. Dowsing rods may not be typical historic preservation tools, but for the Southern Ghost Girl tours, they're part of the effort, one tour at a time. Noelle Annan, WBHM.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Imagine getting an invitation to a town hall from someone across the political aisle. That was the idea behind a recent event sponsored by the Calhoun County Democratic Committee. They asked their members to invite Republican friends in an effort to bridge the divide. WBHM's Noelle Annan went to find out what happened.
The room was buzzing with pressing questions for the Speaker of the night, former Democratic U.S. Senator Doug Jones. Pam Howard had her topics ready.
I have a lot of concerns about the cuts we're going to feel here in Alabama. Can we fund our hospitals? Are we going to be able to pay for our teachers and our education issues and all? I'm hoping he has some solutions for us.
Lou Mosley was thinking about the theme for the event.
I'm really hoping to learn how we can better engage those folks who don't quite have the same views and opinions that we do as far as politics.
Attendees wrote their questions down and put them in a basket for Jones to answer. While he covered topics ranging from how to engage young voters to rising health care costs, Jones originally hoped the town hall would bring people together. Democratic attendees were instructed to bring their Republican friends. While some said they invited conservatives, hardly any showed.
I invited 36 people. I was told no by the Republicans.
I had a friend who has always voted on the Republican ticket, but she has COVID, but she's interested and she's concerned and she feels like things are changing that are affecting her life personally.
I certainly promoted this to the people that I know who are Republicans. I heard a series of excuses and people just dodged it.
That was Mosley and Howard again, along with Lucille Bodenheimer. Each of them said that a political divide is not only at the heart of the current government shutdown, but many issues facing the country today. Some were disappointed that their friends didn't take the opportunity to cross the proverbial aisle. But other attendees, when asked if they invited Republicans, said they didn't even know or speak to any. One even shuddered at the thought of talking to a Republican. But after hunting through the room for one, just one Republican, I finally found J.R. Haynes, who was undaunted by the divide.
And so I decided to come out just because I'm interested in politics. You know, I like to hear all types of perspectives, even though I am a Republican.
Haynes feels that, in spite of Jones's invitation to both Democrats and Republicans for his town hall, Jones only spoke negatively about Republicans and not Democrats. He took issue with how Jones answered his own question, how do we heal political divisiveness in this country?
We need to get people to quit talking about human beings in ways that demean them. I don't know if you saw Senator Tuberville on I don't even know what show it's on.
And I think to actually unite a country or people or community, you have to acknowledge there's faults on both sides, because there absolutely is.
Haynes says while he shares some concerns with the Democratic Party, he has plenty of reservations.
I voted for Trump, and I do think that his rhetoric is oftentimes quite annoying to watch. But we also have had Democrats, people celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk, and like those individuals do exist, and if we can't acknowledge that, how can we move forward as a country, as a society?
He sees Democrats engaging in what he calls political theater, especially over the government shutdown. Nevertheless, he was on board with the idea behind the town hall.
I think that's a beautiful thing for this country, to be able to come out and to engage with people. I mean, there's a lot of politicians, especially on the right, I wish would do events like this.
Sheila Gilbert with the Calhoun County Democratic Committee says she wished more Republicans attended and were willing to engage in political discussions. But she says this will not be the last bipartisan event the committee holds. She hopes Alabamians will do the hard work to connect with their neighbors across the political aisle. Noelle Annan, WBHM.
From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and there's a good chance some people will spend the evening on a date. Dates, of course, can run from romantic to cringeworthy, but they make great stories. So at our recent News and Brews community pop-up, we asked for your best or worst dates. This is what we heard.
My name is John Tice. My worst date was back in the Marine Corps. I took this girl on a date, and we were driving to a restaurant, and on the way there, the car in front of me stopped, and we had a rear-end collision. The whole date ended, and that's my worst experience.
My name's Tim Ryan. I live in the Oak Mountain community. The best is the heart-shaped meatloaf I made for my wife, I think before we were married. I don't know if it was desperation or imagination or if one kind of feeds on the other. I haven't replicated it, but that was my best.
Hey, I'm Camille Smith from Birmingham, and my worst date was in college. I went with a guy, and I got carded because I was under 21, and so he sent me home, and then he went back out afterwards and met another girl.
Hi, my name's Emily Solomon. I'm from Maryland. And my worst date ever was probably when I went on a date with this guy. I mean, it was, like, fine. Like, he was nice. But then one of my exes actually found out that I went on a date. And it was, like, kind of a recent breakup. And he showed up and dragged me out of the establishment. And I blocked him on everything and never spoke to him again.
My name is Judy Collins. I live in Hoover. Back in 1984, I was attending business school. A man that I knew from another place that we had in common had invited me to lunch to discuss a business issue he was having at work for a business that he owned. I ended up working for him, solving his problem. 6 years later, we were married, and 35 years we've been married today.
I'm Jessica Smith, and I'm from Birmingham, and I would say my best date and my worst date, maybe kind of a combination. This was the first one that came to mind. In college, I went on a blind date, and I had never shot a gun before, and the guy picked me up with guns in his backseat and took me to do the skeet shooting things out in the middle of the country, and I was texting my friends, like, if I don't come home, you need to come find me, because I was so nervous. It was a fun time, though. It was a fun time.
My name is Shannon Young from Birmingham, Alabama, and my worst and best date were actually on the same date. So I was on a blind date that was the worst date, but my now husband was our waiter. It was a blind date, so it was not going to work. And then whenever my husband came to the table, I was like, oh, this fella's way more interesting. Much rather hang out with him. So it worked out. He left a note on my car. And the rest is history.
Those were people at our recent News and Brews community pop-up talking about their best or worst dates. This audio postcard was produced by WBHM's Noelle Annanen.